Alrighty, welcome everybody. This is Ground Control on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio network in the known universe. And that, of course, is thanks to you, the listener, so please do click the support tab. Tonight we have a good, an old friend joining us, Vinny Eastwood. How are you doing this evening, Vinny?
Well, somewhat fabulous is my standard response. Can you hear me, Keith?
Yes, I can hear you now.
Okay. I just said, say, somewhat fabulous is my standard response. You know?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. That's how I am.
I'm doing fairly well. It could be better. I'm okay. It's kind of my response lately. You know, could be better, could be worse. And that's actually a pretty good place to be.
I remember some girl at a party asked me one time, oh, so what have you been up to? And I said, do you want the short version or the long version? She goes, the short version. I said, I'm good.
Yeah. Most people really don't want to know anyway. You know, it's just a pleasantry.
Yeah, it's like a formality. It's but at the same time, like, it's not being appreciated for what it could actually be, you know. But I guess that's the advent of cities, you know. There's too many people to stop and have a conversation with everybody, but when you live in a small town, that's just what you do.
Yeah, which I do. I live in, I don't know if I ever told you this, Vinny. I live in a town in Arizona, in central Arizona, called Cornville.
You actually live in a town called Cornville?
I actually live in a town called Cornville.
Sweet mercy. Dreams do come true.
I grew up in Northern California in the San Francisco Bay Area, and really was great. You know, when I was growing up there, but it's changed a lot, and it's just the traffic is insane now, and I'm actually happier out here, although I do miss the beach and I miss my friends. It was a wonderful place to grow up being a musician, and of course I played in rock bands for decades there and really enjoyed it, but I like the quiet here. And of course with the internet, I can talk to you in New Zealand at just the click of a button.
Aren't you lucky? Aren't we blessed? Because it's a
we really are.
Yeah, it's a sort of ubiquitous thing, the internet. In fact, I was talking to my wife this morning. And I said, you know, that there's kids who've been born, you know, who've never known life without the internet. They've never known it. It's absolutely been what it is, you know, the whole time.
It's funny. I resisted it initially. I just didn't. When I tried to work on computers, it always made me feel stupid. but I finally got it, and now I live by it. I don't have television. If I want to watch something, I'll click on YouTube.
Well, it's YouTube University these days, man. You can learn anything on it. And in point of fact, I mean, if somebody came up to me and said, hey, Vinny, I'm thinking about going to university to study media or whatever, you know, like the stuff that I do. And they go, what do you think about that? And I go, well, have you got an internet connection? Yeah. Well, just start watching movies about the stuff you want to learn about. And you'll learn 10 times more and 10 times faster than anybody going into university who thinks they need some kind of degree in order to study what they want to study or do what they want to do. I mean, of course, in some cases, it's just over-regulation, you know, like you can't work as a doctor or give medicine because of such and such. You need this X and Y degree. And in order to get those degrees, you have to develop complex post-traumatic stress disorder through large quantities of cult indoctrination techniques, namely sleep deprivation, nutrient deprivation, silo mentality, central authority figure, and not knowing how your life is going to turn out for you over a period of between 3 and 6 months. That's complex post-traumatic stress disorder. And I was just kind of like thinking about this now, actually. What if the doctors and people like that are actually traumatized and indoctrinated into a cult? And that's why they act strangely the way that they do, and follow blindly the way that they do. Some of them, of course. Not all of them. And cannabis is a big issue in New Zealand. I mean, tomorrow's J-Day. So we're going to be gathering in Albert Park in Auckland, New Zealand here, and smoking a shit ton of weed. You know, it's going to be good, I think. Taking me gazebo in there, couple of comfy chairs, little table, and the joint leader of the legalized cannabis party is also going to be joining me there, and I'm one of the joint chiefs of the legalized cannabis party. You know, I handle the social media and stuff like that, or at least I handled their campaign largely during the last election here. So I got a bit of a stake in it, and in fact, my activism to a large degree actually started with cannabis activism, because after getting busted for cannabis when I was much, much younger, that was kind of like a bit of a rude awakening. You know, I was honest and polite and kind. I never hurt nobody or anything like that. Oh, you want to destroy my life? Okay, that doesn't make sense. Kind of doesn't compute. And sure enough, they did destroy my life, and that's why the ridiculous law has to be repealed, because there's people being traumatized on a daily basis by the law and its enforcement. And as somebody who suffered at the hands of the enforcement, who incidentally, when you've got complex post-traumatic stress disorder, you know what really helps with that?
Cannabis.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got a shoulder ache. Cannabis. I've got a backache. Cannabis. Well, then you could just use cannabis for everything. Exactly. Anybody could just grow it in their backyard and use it for anything they got. Oh, my daughter's anorexic. Cannabis. My arthritis is playing up. Cannabis. And it's just every... Imagine that. If the Simpsons quote was reutilized. Beer, the cause of and solution to all of life's problems. Cannabis is just simply the solution to all the problems. You know, it doesn't matter what problem you think about. You know, oh, you got people who are psychologically unwell or whatever. Maybe it's because you're persecuting them because they smoke weed and free their mind, and they don't like the reality that it shows them that everybody else is actually a brainwashed, mind-controlled, bigoted scumbag, slave scum. You know, just the list goes on of the insulting things that you can call ordinary people. It's not a list that ends, you know, because when you are on the outside of society, there is nothing that can actually satisfy you than being on the inside, right? And at the moment, there's plenty of people who are operating around in society, who are in the big leagues and what have you, who use a lot of cannabis. And they ain't getting busted, so they don't care. You know, it's just, hey, I don't understand the pain and trauma people go through on a daily basis because of those laws being there. I flout the law on a daily basis without any consequences. Good for me. Ha 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 ha. That kind of attitude needs to stop. Sometimes we need to understand that there is a greater responsibility with our actions, and that sometimes just allowing bad things to happen to other people, you eventually become culpable for that. You know? And it's the wrong thing to do, to stand by and allow people to be hurt by a 90-plus-year-old law. Dude, I mean, imagine the stuff we didn't know 90 years ago. Oh, mental illness isn't caused by demons? Oh, my God!
That's a whole nother subject I could talk about, but you know, I actually was arrested for cannabis myself back when I was 17 years old, and I just got somebody just told me the server drop. If okay, he says it's back now. At any rate, and it was very traumatic. I was 17 years old, and the cops thought I was a hard ass because I wouldn't tell them anything. You know, they wanted to ask me all these questions, like, well, how often do you use and all this stuff? And I was like, I'm not saying anything, you know, as far as you know, just this one time, right? And I was visiting my cousins, and my aunt came and picked us up, and my cousin, that I was with, I was just telling him, oh, I use it, you know, a couple times a week, and you know, all this. I said, you don't got to tell him that stuff, you know, and You know, but it is a trauma. As far as I'm concerned, nobody should be in jail for a nonviolent drug offense. I don't care what drug it is. Methamphetamines, actually, I view as a very damaging, but something like cannabis, I think, could be used. You know, they say cannabis is a gateway drug to harder drugs. I think it could be the reverse. And then, of course, there's the tremendous medical benefits of it. Here in Arizona, it is legal for medical use. I think it was last year. It might have been the year before. We had a bill to vote on to make it legal for recreational, like, you know, the state of Washington and some other states, Colorado. But sadly, that failed. I wish it had passed, but I'm sure it will at some point.
I am starting to wonder between this, or wander rather, between these ideals of hope versus despair, because you look at the situation as it is, and quite frankly, there's many reasons to despair. But you look at the situation from a different light, and you say that there's actually a lot of progress going on over there. But you look even further into the progress that's being made, and you'll find that that progress is actually going in the other direction. Right? That's the thing that I'm really starting to get effed off about, is one time you'll come in and you'll say, hey, we want to legalize X cannabis whatever bill, etc. And then you look in the fine print of that bill, and it turns out it's basically changing very little, only benefiting a very minor amount of people, and majorly benefiting massive corporations to a large degree. It's just like the Obamacare, where the insurance companies wrote the healthcare legislation to benefit them. I think that big business is writing our cannabis laws to benefit them, to wipe out their competition. I mean, imagine it. You've got dealers and growers all over the world who are operating currently in secret. You give them suddenly what you're doing is legal, they've got skills, they've got expertise, they've got routines, they can expand their operations very much immediately. They don't want that. They want to control that. And I think that it is a good idea, you know, to be hopeful, you know, changes on the horizon, but also be remarkably cynical, because that's how the people who run the world think, in a cynical way. And we can't counteract a lot of their subversion unless we are willing to think, what would they actually do in this situation? So you say, okay, cannabis being legalized worldwide, just fully legalized, no regulations, nothing per se, no taxes. Anybody can grow as much weed as they want to smoke, as much weed as they need to heal their ills, as much weed as they need to build their house, as much weed as they need to build a bed for their frickin' animal, their shampoo, whatever. 50,000 industrial uses, grown out of the earth, just like that. You give that freedom to everybody. What's going to happen as soon as these people who have a lot invested in scarcity, a lot invested in manufacturing and all of these kind of things, and central points, a lot of power, a lot of control, a lot of banking interests. Suddenly, people are able to grow money on trees, as it were, just as the banks are able to create money out of thin air and loan it to people. This isn't something they're just going to allow to happen, I don't think. This is something that's going to have to be forced by the people. And ultimately, that means that the people, when everybody says the people, they don't include themselves in that statement. The people need to do this, the people need to do that, but they themselves don't actually do anything. But if you are a person, you have some kind of an obligation to at least speak up about the problem. Doesn't matter what your skill set is. If you are a carpenter, you could find out that, hey, a lot of the things that are normally built out of wood can also be built from cannabis. And you can start learning about it. And after you've learned a bit about it, you can start talking to people a bit about it. Then you can start doing something about it. can start working towards something, this would be really great. Because each individual person is quite powerful in their own right. They're capable of accomplishing immense things when they set their mind to something. But I think to a large degree, we've been robbed of the capability of doing what we love, what we dream, because society doesn't really want people like that. They do to a degree, as long as they're on a leash. You know, oh, you're creative and you can do all this kind of stuff, but I want to do this. And, no, you can't do that. You'll be blackballed, mate. Just an industrial python just with its coils around people's creative potential. Because creative people can be very problematic because they're able to create things that don't yet exist. In a lot of cases, can't even be predicted. And that scares people who are obsessed with control because they don't understand it. They feel like things tomorrow have to be like the things yesterday. They're afraid to change in a lot of ways. And I think maybe that fear has been pushed down the line to onto people's consciousness. To say, hey, look, you need to be afraid of change. No. You need to be afraid of people coming to you and saying, I've got facts. I've got evidence. Please look at it. People are dying. And if you don't look at it, people are going to continue to die. Don't listen to those people, bro. They want change. And change is dangerous. You know, it could be so dangerous if cannabis was legalized. Imagine all the whatevers that could possibly happen. You mean like, white woman having sex with black men or something, eh? Yeah? that terrible threat that, you know, you're afraid that people are just going to go bonkers and murder each other, eh? Oh, okay. You're saying that if cannabis gets legalized, suddenly everybody will become a complete frickin' stoner pothead and nothing will get done. As far as I'm concerned, that'd be an improvement because the large amount of what's being done in society shouldn't be done!
You know, it's so true what you're saying. It's threatening to the status quo. They're very happy with their vested interests and getting their government jobs and all that stuff. But it appears to me, Vinny, you know, we had, of course, Trump was elected, and I'm cautiously optimistic. Many people are rah-rah Trump, and I think he's doing pretty good. It would have been terrible if Hillary. I mean, this was a nightmare. Were it to be her. But I think gradually and through the medium of the internet, we've got kind of a global consciousness where I can talk to you on the other side of the world and discuss these issues. And I really do think it does help. It does educate us. I for a while there, I was a grower for a woman, an elderly woman that was prescribed medical marijuana. And so I studied it, like you were talking earlier about, you know, YouTube. It turns out if you ingest cannabis, if you just put it in a blender, you don't get any psychotropic effects if it's not heated. But it is so full of nutrition. And so I watched this video with from San Francisco Kaiser Hospital Medical, one of the head guys there had recommended it to her. And she had lupus and all kinds of really debilitating diseases. She was essentially bedridden. And through the use of juicing, she got back on her feet and she was fine. She said all her symptoms receded. And the only time they reappeared was when she traveled to Europe for about 3 weeks. And that was unavailable to her. And then when she got back home, again, within weeks, all her symptoms receded, went into remission. So it's fantastic medically, and it's incredibly threatening to us, you know, take the pharmacological industry.
Yeah. Let me explain that one to the audience for a second, if I may, Keith. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, let's say you've got an ailment. You've got a wee cough, let's say. Or you go to the doctor, and he says, okay, I've got two things here for you. And you go, okay, what's option number one? He says, well, option number one is a plant that hasn't killed anybody in 10,000 years and is virtually free and is almost 100% effective every time. Yeah. What's option number two? Well, option number two is a prohibitively expensive, incredibly dangerous, unforeseen risk to your health that will create other health conditions and possibly kill you. And also, they'll addict you to them, so you can't stop taking them, and it's going to cost you as much money as you got, and probably eventually your life. Well, you know, Doctor, option two sounds really great. That's the one you're recommending, isn't it? Absolutely. Take option two, mate. Oh, Doc, you just cheered me up so well. I mean, a lifetime of addiction and horrible side effects. What could go wrong? You know? But their brain has an on and off switch. Turn your brain on and take option one. Okay? Been used for 10,000 years. How much research do you need? It's quite the scale, because let's say the different options here. How many people do you want to kill every year? Let's say we want to kill 40,000 people a year. You know, no worries, mate. It's just 40,000. It's just about, you know, 40 times as much people as you've ever met, really, and had a conversation with in your entire life. That's all that it is. And then you have a look at the suicide statistics. It's the leading cause of death in America. And then you have a look at all these people who commit suicide. And what medications were they on? The ones with the side effect may cause suicide. And people just can't join the dots on this one. They're like, man, all these people with these suicide drugs are committing suicide. I just can't piece it together.
And don't forget, they're doing school shootings. You know, if these kids from Columbine were smoking weed instead of taking Ritalin or whatever it was they were on. Imagine this,
two scenarios. Kid from Columbine busts into the classroom and he goes, hey, man, I'm going to blow you out. Look at the size of this joint I got. I stole it from my dad, man. All right. Far less violent situation. But no, let's put them on psychotropic drugs that make them play out their fantasies. You know that? That's one of the scariest things about these drugs, is they make you play out your fantasies. They make you live out your dreams. There was this story a while back of a woman who drowned all five of her children in a bathtub. That woman started taking medication because she had a recurring nightmare of her children being drowned in a bathtub. And then one night, after taking her medication and going to sleep, she got up in her sleep and drowned all her children in the bathtub.
Yeah, I remember that.
Everybody
I do, I remember.
But people don't remember what caused it. In New Zealand, there was a case where a guy named Clayton Elliott, or Clayton Cosgrove, I think, and he stabbed his girlfriend, beautiful girl, Sophie Elliott, 217 times with a pair of scissors. All right, everybody in New Zealand heard about it. It was like the most shocking murder ever even heard. What people didn't hear about is that on the morning before he did that, he was very stressed and tripled his dose of Prozac, which has a side effect, may cause murder, you know? These are the kind of things. A lot of the fear that's being implanted into society is actually being caused by the medications that they're deliberately giving people to treat them for these illnesses that they don't actually treat, so that they can go out there in a very sporadic manner and just cause chaos, give things to report on, give people horrible things that are going on without explaining what the cause actually is. And before you know it, people ain't trusting each other. They're checking each other. They're wanting to have all this security and that kind of thing. I mean, major false flags and things like that. There's a lot of talk about how many of these school shootings have elements of staging. And a lot of times, they wind up being on medication. they wound up having these kids being phoned into the FBI or the police or whatever multiple times before these shootings. There's a drill by emergency services on the day of the shootings, a drill for shooters. You know, these kind of things start to become a little bit strange and blurry after a while. And I think that's the whole idea. The original creation of the CIA, which is now invested in all the media, you know, you go watch a movie, the CIA is presenting it to you. You know, the chances are quite high of that. And their job originally, when they were created during World War II, the OSS, before they became the CIA, was to promote confusion among America's enemies.
Right.
After World War II was over and they got changed to the CIA, their enemy changed. The American people. American people's consciousness. That's the scary thing.
I'm convinced they're all staged, even going all the way back to Columbine. I think with like you take Mandalay Bay, the Las Vegas shooting, and all of a sudden, all the cameras don't work. You know, how many cameras are just in that one hotel? Probably.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. That's absolutely right.
I think they're all staged.
I think that's a bit too far off, because there's on average, I heard somewhere there's at least one a day, maybe three, four a day in the United States. All right. Now, could they possibly be all staged? You know, it'd actually take quite an enormous apparatus. The US government does have such an apparatus. However, I would think that the staged ones would be the ones everybody hears about.
Yeah, that's what I meant. The ones in the news that are mass shootings.
Probably more likely, rather than absolutely, you know, I don't need to investigate each of them case by case, because, the problem is we get ourselves into belief structures, especially if we believe that we're talking about facts and not our opinions.
That's a whole nother topic.
Well, it's an important topic to introduce into anything that you're discussing, really, is how are we looking at what we're discussing? You know, because what happens is when people stop communicating effectively, conflict starts to breed, and if they don't communicate at all, conflict is the only option. And I think that we're not, shall we say, in a role in the alternative media to just bring people the news, tell them what there is in the news or whatever. The role of the alternative media is actually to analyze the news as it comes in, rather than just tell it to you and get people to think about it more themselves. Because there isn't a whole lot of room for independent thought out there, because most of the time people are trying to tell you their take on things rather than attempting to get you to question yours.
You know, I've actually been thinking a lot about that lately, because you know, I've had some conversations with some people that their opinions they're telling me are facts, you know, and I'm trying to tell them, no, that's just your own personal belief structure, and I'm not going to buy it, because first of all, it's wrong. I know it's wrong. But second of all, I'm not going to believe anything just because somebody tells me to. And then they tell me, if I don't believe what they're saying, my soul is lost. Well, right away there, I've got a problem with that. And then you try to communicate with them, and I'll say something innocuous, like, you know, I just wrote this new song I really like. And they'll say, wow, how long have you been worshiping Satan? It's like they're hearing something completely different. I kind of despair of it a little bit.
It's trying to understand insanity. That's the main way you'll get yourself on the boatload to insanity, isn't it?
Yeah, so you just got to let them be and just try to stay in tune with what you're trying to do.
Well, how do you communicate with somebody who every time you say something misinterprets what you're saying deliberately?
You can't. You just give up. I just give
it's
up.
It's because they're not open to communicate. So sometimes you just need to go respectfully. Excuse me. I understand you've got your beliefs, and I may have mine, and there may be facts and things like that that we can share. But however, if there's not any open dialogue, if there isn't any sharing of beliefs or conversation pieces, then there is no relationship here, and please leave.
And then you do find people that you really can reach and touch. And so that's where, you know, we've got to, you know, focus our energies on what does work.
Yeah, man. It's the thing I needed to get over first off when I became an activist was stop having an emotional attachment to somebody accepting what I'm saying as facts.
That's right.
You know? Oh, yeah. You've got to know this fact because it's a fact. You think people are going to believe what you're saying just because you've got facts? No. They have to see you as some kind of authority or some kind of teacher or whatever to automatically believe what you say. And that's not because they understand what you say. That's just because they're programmed. Oh, it's a white coat. Oh, it's a suit and tie. Oh, it's a something, something.
Right.
Oh, they're speaking in some kind of seductive news reading language. I'm going to believe everything they say. You know.
Well, but when you tell the truth, there's a resonance to it that people that are ready will hear, and you'll ring some bells in them.
Yeah, well, in some cases, those bells are like a little jingle bell back in the day or something like that. And sometimes they're like a church steeple bell going off right next to your eardrum places.
Or a massive gong.
But boom! And we talked about this on the show the other day, that those who seek enlightenment with the perspective that, oh, it's going to be great, I'm going to become enlightened or something like that. No, that's not how it works. You're going to lose something you love. You're going to be very badly hurt. You're going to experience immense amount of hardship. And then maybe you reach enlightenment. And after you reach enlightenment, you're going to get very badly hurt. You're going to have something you love taken away from you. And you're going to have to endure some more hardship. Nothing actually changes. Right?
Well, I think it does require of us a greater responsibility as we get greater understanding. And I've said on air many times, it seems like the more I learn, the less I understand, the more of a mystery it is.
Well, they say that people who are traumatized, the way to get them into doing what it is that they're traumatized out of doing, you know, is to introduce it a tiny little step at a time. You know?
Yeah.
Tiny little step regular at a time. And once you do something that you're afraid of doing or that you haven't done for a really long time, tiny little step at a time, you develop a sense of bravery about it. You don't, the fear or the trepidation about it will actually never go away, but you'll just become more brave.
Yeah, courage.
It's, I think maybe a lot of the times, like me and my wife, we went to saw Avengers Infinity War today, and I just am struck by the thought that how many people believe that courage and heroism comes from having some great gift bestowed upon them, or some great circumstance that they're put through, that kind of thing, and oh, now I've got all these powers and everything. Metaphorically, I think it's actually quite true. But what's problematic is that when people are watching films, they tend to take them literally rather than as an allegory. Somebody gets captured, gets held in a cave, and he builds a weaponized suit to get himself out of it and kill all the terrorists. You know?
Iron Man.
Yeah. And then you go, okay, well, what's the actual allegory here? Well, it's somebody who, having no experience with what real suffering is, with what a real threat to his life actually feels like, suddenly has that happen to him. And instead of being afraid, doing what he's told, and allowing himself to die in fear, he thinks and he finds a way out. And that's the inherent lesson to learn from any kind of pain that you'd survive, is that you're still alive. You may be weaker, you may be stronger, but the point of fact is you're still alive after whatever it is that happened to you. And because you're alive, there's an inherent obligation to do something with your life. And people go, well, what do I do with my life then? What's my purpose? And they foolishly go and ask other people that. You know, it's like, oh, yeah, somebody's going to give you the answer, bro. You know, like your own unique combination of social experiences, upbringing, skills, and talents. Somebody else is going to tell you how to use it, eh? That's what you're hoping for? Doesn't work that way. You got to ask yourself, what are my unique experiences and talents? What do they actually make me good at? And could I possibly make a living off that? Or could I possibly have some fun off that? Okay, we'll do that. Just a little bit. Find out. Yeah, quite enjoy it. Made a little money. I'll do it again. And then you're on your way. But it's only after you have that realization in yourself. The unique complexity of me. Where does it fit in the everythingness of everyone else? And that's when you find yourself. I believe that a large part of people's lives that they're living are not lives that they're actually living. It's somebody else's life that they're living.
Yeah.
It's somebody else's dream that they're fulfilling. And that's why,
you know,
people are depressed.
I used the analogy on my show the other day. I said, you know, I was thinking back on how I got to be where I am now. And I said, you know, I feel like actually what happened is I was spun out of the hamster wheel. It's like the personal velocity of my intention to develop consciously. It's just the old institutions that I was in. You know, it's funny, Vinny. I don't know how much you know about me, but I used to work for cops. I was a radio technician, and I made their little blinky lights go, is what I like to say. In other words, their light bars and all that stuff. And my friends, when they found out that I was working for cops, when I moved back to Northern California, they said, you're working for cops? You know, because I was the stoner guitar player in bands that they used to go see. And it was such a dichotomy. But I really have a talent for electronics, and ended up being fired from my Motorola franchise that was just downsizing. I was the highest paid employee, and you know, they were poorly managed, and I ended up hiring one of my former bosses. And I got a paycheck for $13,000 plus for one day's work on one of where we redid the radio system for one of my customers. And but then Motorola came in and took over, you know, and sold the County of Marin $22 million investment. And it is very hard to be a small business person in California, and probably the rest of the states as well. But
so they Motorola'd over you.
Yeah, you know, it's like Walmart came in, you know, the equivalent. And it's very hard to run a small business. But I was so happy doing it because I didn't have some stupid boss telling me some dumb thing. You know, so why don't we just do things right? I was finally in a position where I could just say, okay, let's just do it right. And it was very profitable. I bought all kinds of guitars and recording equipment. And, you know, I've been really getting back into music lately. And, oh, by the way, this show is going by so fast. I want to be sure everybody knows where to find you, Vinny. Why don't you tell everybody about your websites? Are you still doing lots of YouTube videos and such?
Oh, yeah. Well, basically, if you just Google Vinny Eastwood, that's Vinny with a Y, because it's the most important question, and Eastwood might go ahead, make my news. You'll find out quite a bit about me. So first stop is the VinnyEastwoodShow.com. That's the VinnyEastwoodShow.com. And then there's YouTube.com/C/VinnyEastwoodNZ for the YouTube channel there. And I think Facebook.com/VinnyEastwoodShow for my page on Facebook there. So I've on that YouTube channel and on the website, there's a couple of thousand interviews, usually an hour or two in length, that have been catalogued over since basically 2010 is when the show officially launched. And in fact, I think I've been doing talk radio for maybe since 2008, or rather just being on YouTube at least since 2008. So this is basically in my 10th year of operation. And it's interesting because you look back at, look at all these incredibly famous, well-known, very enlightened, wise individuals that I've actually had a chance to talk to.
Yeah.
And a deeper realization actually comes back that if you hear a good conversation, you feel in some way a part of that conversation. You know, it can affect you in many ways. And what I've been trying to tell my audience a little bit of over the years is, if you have to tune out of my show because you've got something going on in your life that's actually more important than sitting down and listening to somebody else go through their life, then that's a good thing. Don't apologize to me. I say thank you. Because that's what you're supposed to be doing, you know? Don't live vicariously through the achievements of others. Because you can drive yourself crazy doing like that. I mean, I remember why I drive myself crazy listening to too much Alex Jones. And started to become like him. And then I realized that it wasn't my voice coming out of my mouth. It was his. And I had to find my own voice by thinking for myself.
I had the same experience. I remember, first of all, I was enlightened enough. Maybe that's the wrong word. I was savvy enough or cynical enough to know that when the towers fell, I remember I had fallen asleep with the television on and woke up to the towers disaster. And I knew right away it was an inside job. I just knew. It didn't take me years later, like many people, you know, as the wonderful investigators pieced it together and said, look, you know, whatever happened, it wasn't those planes that took down those towers. Mm-hmm. There's different theories about how it happened, but I knew, and guess where I was going that morning? To a police department to do some work. And of course, they're all, of course, you know, believing the story of the terrorists. And so I made the mistake of the Alex Jones, exactly what you were saying, trying to tell my brother it was an inside job. And the harder I tried to tell him, the more resistant he was to me. And just didn't want to hear it. And so I realized that was a mistake, you know, to take that approach.
Yeah. And I wonder, is that just something we do when we believe something so hard and we don't know how to communicate it effectively across? Because listening to somebody communicate to you effectively is different from trying to communicate that information to somebody else, right? You don't remember everything they said or the ways they say it. You try to remember these specific little bits or whatever, but you can't remember it properly. And you wound up just looking like an idiot and a crazy person. And surprisingly enough, just going and telling somebody this is the way it is, just because you heard somebody say it, that actually is what a crazy person would do. You know?
Yeah.
It's this mass madness. And I've got a big stake in the pie, really, with the mass madness, because it winds up, the old saying is that people are more likely to burn their prophets than burn a corrupt church to the ground that they used to worship at. And a lot of the people that are standing up, that are saying something, they get a lot of flack. And a whole lot of different ways that their life becomes harder because they're doing the opposite of what society is being directed to do. And by that I mean, what's right, you know? And I think a large part of the reason why people are inactive to a large degree is the information they're receiving or the people that are communicating that information aren't doing it in an empowering way. They're doing it in a disempowering way. So, yeah. For instance, a whole bunch of people got blown up in Syria. We're invading them and bombing them now. Empowering or disempowering? Trump got elected. We basically don't have to do anything. He'll solve all the New World Order. Empowering? Disempowering. You know, it's we've got to sort of wake up to ourselves, because we will always be following somebody. You know, that's the course of human nature. But I think if you follow your heart rather than somebody else, you do a lot better. You know, just personally, I've been trying to follow my heart and don't really give too a care to the wind what anybody else thinks I should do with my life. You know, that's why it's called my life. I get to do kind of what I want to do with it. However, that principle of being able to do what you want with your own life is completely annexed by the fact that you're a debt slave, by the fact that you've got a birth certificate, by the fact that you live in an elected dictatorship, by the fact that there are cops. I saw a video today that a girl had her feet up on the seat in the New York subway. A cop told her to move her feet. She didn't. And he arrested her. You know? And the woman that stood beside her, standing up for her, telling the cops that they were lying scum. Right? She told the truth. You know? Because we get this question, I think, that somebody put to me: what's a good cop? All right, a good cop is somebody who watches bad cops do bad cop stuff and says nothing about it, right? That's basically what a good cop is. That's not a good cop, is it? Because there are no good cops. It's bad cop, worse cop. Bad cop, worse cop. There's the worst cop who'll really mess you up. And then there's the bad cop who won't tell nobody about it. You know? That's basically the cult indoctrination of it all. And that situation actually got very much ingrained into me after I'd been doing a little bit of research into cult indoctrination and then interviewed a former New Zealand constable.
Uh-huh.
And they had to do a whole lot of marching. Cult indoctrination says repetition of mindless tasks in order to keep the initiate in a submissive state.
Right.
They didn't have adequate nutrition in the barracks and things like that. The meals were smaller. In cult indoctrination, you give malnourishment to your members. They had a whole bunch of legal jargon and things like that that they had to repeat. You know, the same thing over again. They, in a cult, you have assigned different names. In the police, they assign you different numbers. So you're no longer even known as your name. You're only known as a number. In a cult, they get you away from your family and your friends. In the police, when you finally get your badge, they ship you out to a different part of the country where you don't have any family or friends. And the only place you can really then go to drink is a police bar. The cult becomes your family. The cops become your family. The reason why they do this is because the next stage of the cult is to get you to guilt trip the other cult members who are stepping out of line or aren't doing enough for the cult or the cult leader. In the police, you get a feather in your cap if you bust a whole bunch of innocent stoners. If you inform on other police officers for busting innocent stoners who have done nothing wrong because the law itself is evil, you get reprimanded. You get told off, not only by your superiors, but everybody else. In a cult, the person who you were gets deleted. Who you are gets pulled out and they stuff something else in. And that's what happens. And it's a frightening thing, because when you hear about these aspects of cult indoctrination, to a large degree, we're all going through it.
There's the top of the hour break. We've got about 5 minutes. Vinny, I hope you'll stay with us into the second hour.
I'm sorry, I can't, man.
You can't? Okay. Thank you very much for being with us tonight. Everybody, Vinny Eastwood. Check out Google Vinny Eastwood. and check out his videos. Thanks, Vinny.
Cheers, bye.